Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahadevyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so next on the list then we have, okay, we're finishing with Rasa. Rasa is of one nature, but it is of three different platforms that is applied. That which is on the spiritual, that which is on the emotional, that which is on the sensual. Right? So the sensual means your senses and dead matter is the relationship. Right? The dead matter being the masculine or the vishai, your senses being the feminine, the ashray. Right, the emotional, then it depends upon who's in which position at the moment, which way it goes, but therefore ashray and vishay will be between two people, not between a living entity and dead matter. And Vaikuntha will mean between the soul and God, right, or between, you know, the soul on the transcendental platform and another devotee on the transcendental platform. Right, does that make sense? Like that. So, any questions that or not understood on rasa. Right. Okay. Then adiatmik, adidaivik, adibhautik. So then here this is applied in many, many ways. Like that, as we go through the literature, then we will start to see the many different ways it's applied. But basically it's pointing out is you have yourself, you have others, and then you have what's behind that. Right? So we have ourself. So adiatmik, then, if we're taking it, let's say, what we generally hear about is in the relationship to klesha. Klesha means problems or difficulties. So adiatmik klesha means difficulties that come to you due to your body and mind. It means it's due to yourself. Adibhautik means what comes from other living entities, the problems that they give. Adidaivik means what comes from nature. You know, in other words, the demigods. Like here, it's been raining for the last so many days, the place is very muddy, hard to move around, people get sick. That is adiatmik, right? The result then is it causes some trouble on the adiatmik platform, or other people may complain, you know, why there's so much mud and you got to do something about it, so then you get the adibhautik, right? Does that make sense? But in any case, it's there. So, but we see is that adiatmik is oneself. Adibhautik was with others. Adidaivik was the demigods. Now, in relationships, then oneself, that's where you're establishing yourself. That's who you are, would be in the sambandha. And the abhideya would be the adibhautik. Then you interact with others. Adiatmik then would be what's behind it. Right? Does that make sense? So you're interacting with others, but actually who is getting it done? The demigods. So that's the thing, is we get attached to our actions when we shouldn't, right? Because we think we're the doer when we're not. Or we get, you know, upset with others because we say they do it when it's actually not, it's the modes of nature. Or you could take it the other way, reverse it, is that we're adiatmik, other people are the prayojana, adibhautik, we're trying to interact with them. It's through the adidaivik, or the mode of goodness, that interaction goes on. Does that make sense? So in any case, in all these different ways, you can put it together. So this will come up when it comes in creation, so many other things. This is used a lot, these threes. Yes?
How about in terms of acquiring knowledge?
In other words, you yourself means by your own studies and by your own practices, that would be your adiatmik. Adibhautik is what you're going to gain from others. Adidaivik is going to be, you know, what is coming down, what's already there, the Veda, the authority, the tradition, things like that.
I meant in terms of like epistemology, like whatever's existing in the object. I heard someone from Maharaj give an explanation.
What explanation did he give?
It was in terms of what we perceive on the projection level, and then what's actually existing in the object inherently, and like that. I wasn't clear.
Oh, okay. So that if you, okay, so. Adhyatmic would be what you're able to perceive and understand, but then it's like we said, it's through your practice and understanding that you'll get something. But you've heard it from authority, right? But then adibhautik will be what you gain from others, right? The process of the teacher teaching you means that mechanical process. What you have learned from other people, just they're telling you their experiences and all that. But your realizations, I mean, means that element that's coming because that's beyond the perception, like that. So that would be your adidaivik, you know, or what is coming down in the tradition, what the great personalities they've done. Does that make sense? So you always have ourself, what we perceive as something that's like us, but separate from us, and then there's the reality of what's going on. You know what I'm saying? We see us, there's the pillar, but the point is that pillar performs what it does because of higher power. Right? It's not the brick, it's not the mortar, it's the Lord's potency. You know, same way in ourselves that we're able to do things. You know, we say adhyatmic is the self, but the same way is that we can speak or our eyelids blink is because of the demigods. So these three are always at hand. So in other words, you're doing for yourself, that's one thing, you're doing for others, that's another thing, when you're doing for the higher purpose, that's a third. So then it always, does that make sense? So there's always these three. So you're always going to have yourself, the Lord, and the material energy. Does that make sense? So there's always going to be that aspect. Then you have knowledge. Yes?
When you say that there's going to be those three, mm-hmm. Which ones are the material energy and which one's the Lord?
In this case, you would say it would be adiatmic would be oneself, adibhautik would be the material energy, and adidaivik would be the Lord. Because the devas get their potency from the Lord, so he's the supreme daiva. Does that make sense? So like that then. You know, this consideration is all, it's just another way of this, you know, this, how you say? Chitta chitishwara. Like that, it's another form of that. So, okay, so Panchanga Nyaya, then we did in that class there. The Akarna concepts will also come in that in the evening class. So then that moves us to the next page. Varnashrama concepts. Just basic principles. We've all heard of the four ashrams, four varnas. But the principle of it is its relationship. It's establishing, based on Krishna's laws, by the natural form of rasa in the spiritual platform. Then it's naturally establishing what are the rules and regulations of human interaction here. Does that make sense? Human interaction here has to be progressive. Therefore, it's not like an animal. It is like a human. And human means you're trying to elevate yourself. Therefore, the rules of Varnashram are there so that we may properly move forward. Does that make sense? That's all it's for. It's not, its side thing is that you perform the religious duties, but that's to engage your conditioned nature in progressive activities. Right? Because otherwise, if you're on the transcendental platform, your nature should be engaged in spiritual activities. Right? Does that make sense? That's what you'd be doing. The spiritual body, the spiritual senses, the spiritual mind would be engaging in spiritual activities with Krishna. Right? But on the material platform, then that having been forgotten, then the relationship then is established because we don't know what's proper, then through the rules and regulations of Varnashram, we interact with others in a way that we engage our natural tendencies in higher purposes. That makes sense. Yes? No? Does it make sense? Doesn't make sense? Doesn't. So it doesn't make sense, then you raise your hand. You know, or you react. Does that make sense? Otherwise, I go on as if I say any questions and no one has any questions, then that means it's done. The idea is everyone's here in class to learn. If somebody doesn't know, it's like this. Everybody kind of doesn't know, but either they don't think, you know, much about it, or they're too embarrassed to ask. So if somebody asks, they ask a question everybody else would like to ask anyway. Right? Because generally you notice in class when people ask questions that you would be embarrassed to ask, do you hear anybody laughing? Generally not. Why? Because it's a question they'd love to ask, but they don't. So no one has to worry about that. If they ask a seemingly stupid question, everybody will be upset. No, people like you to ask stupid questions because they would like to ask it themselves. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's only seemingly stupid. It's not stupid. Right? So that's the whole idea. Is if one doesn't know, then one knows. And when one knows, one moves on. So then, the idea then in the Varnashram is that all of these rules and regulations are there so that we know how to behave in human society, right? Because what is the social culture of Braj? It's human, right? So if you want to go to Braj, it's the natural culture. This is what they follow. But they follow with Krishna as the center and in a spontaneous way. But still the form of it is still there. Does that make sense? It's still there. It's the same culture. Like that. But it's not the main medium. They'll use it, but it's not the main medium. It's the devotion that is the most prominent. In Vaikuntha, it's devotion through those rules of Varnashram. Therefore, Vaikuntha, they'll follow very strictly the rules of Varnashram. While in Vrindavan, they follow them, but it's not necessarily as strict. But it's still the basis. It's not that the strictness is less because it doesn't matter because they have an alternative, so-called alternative culture known as modern culture. Does that make sense? Because much of the time, see, there's a difference between, let's say, the six Goswamis giving up Varnashram and living under a tree. Meaning they used to follow it and they gave it up. Then someone who never followed it, and even though he comes in contact with it, doesn't want to follow it, and then claiming that it's spiritual to not follow it because the Goswamis didn't follow it, then that's okay if your sentiment is to do like the Goswamis did. But the point is don't consider that it's the same renunciation. Because you didn't renounce anything. Because to renounce something, you have to have it in the first place. You know, it's like if I sit here and go, I renounce all of Bill Gates' money. His billions of dollars I don't care for. I won't use a penny. Right? So that's the whole point. If someone coming from a modern background and then they come in contact with the Vedic culture and then they still don't follow it, right? What was given up? Nothing. Does that make sense? If one understands the importance of it, one would like to follow it, but there's a situation that doesn't warrant it. You understand warrant? It means it's not important or it doesn't suit. It doesn't match. Doesn't warrant the situation and he doesn't follow it, then that's the same understanding, the same mentality. But if he's not following because he doesn't like to follow it because he likes to follow his own culture, his modern culture, then that's nothing glorious, nothing special. Does that make sense? In other words, it may be correct philosophically, but his own personal gain won't be anything. Right? If it's that the Goswamis did like this, I do like this, then you'll get the benefit. But if it's because I don't want to do it, it's like I'm willing to do it, but they didn't do it, I don't do it. But if it's a matter of I don't want to do it, and therefore, because they didn't do it, now I have a reason I don't have to do it, then that's not so good. Does that make sense? Yes.
What it means that the Goswamis, they gave up Varanashram? Because even
means they're Paramahamsas. They still follow the culture of Varanashram, but they're not following any occupational duty to maintain themselves. You understand? A Shudra performs arts, and by that he's maintained. Vaishya performs, you know, economics, he's maintained. The Kshatriya protects the people and administrates, therefore he's maintained. The Brahmin performs his brahminical duties, therefore he's maintained. But as a Paramahamsa, they don't do that. They just absorb themselves in their service. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then it's up to Krishna. He takes care of them or not. Right? In other words, they're not dependent upon the social duties to maintain themselves. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. It still doesn't mean that the culture is not followed. Cultures, that's the eternal principle. You know, it's not a temporary principle. This is not just Indian culture. This is the tradition. Indian culture is okay, the men can wear suits, but the women wear saris. That's Hindu. Or the women wear saris and they wear the bindi, but their hair can be loose. You know, so that you're not too fanatic. Or it can be loose, but also nicely cut, you know, into some fashion, but not too short. Like that. If it's too short, that means then you're a Sindhi, and you wouldn't want to be anybody to figure that one out. So, therefore, you know, it should be like at least shoulder length, better it's a little past. So it has the idea that it's long, it has the Indian look like it's long, but it's, you know, more, you know, modern, fashionable, so-called. And also as Hindu is that even if it's a situation where a Westerner would tie their hair, you wouldn't, because tying hair is Indian and you wouldn't want to do that. This is how you identify, that's Hindu. Not that they wear a sari or they wear a bindi or that they wear a dhoti. That's eternal. One has to be able to distinguish the difference between what is Indian and what is eternal. If you can't, then better to get educated. Don't talk. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if one has, let's say one is a carpenter, and he's an expert carpenter, he doesn't give comments on mechanics, you know, car mechanics or something. Does that make sense? So one may be a modern academic and have so much facility, but when it comes to Vedic culture, unless that is your training, don't comment on it. Does that make sense? I'm talking about devotees here, of course. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you haven't been trained in it, don't comment on it. If you have not spent time in India, didn't live in India, didn't live with the Indians, you have no right to comment on Indian culture. Because you can't tell the difference between what is actually Vedic and what is modern Indian. You know, what, in other words, what is Vedic that's been adjusted for the modern taste? That you can't tell. So you're unqualified, so one shouldn't speak. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. That's the whole point. In other words, where your experts speak there. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this, say, if you are, you know, your PhD is in, let's say, you know, quantum physics, you don't comment on music. So the PhD in music, he comments on music. He doesn't comment on quantum physics. It's just, that's just the law. Devotees tend to not follow this law. Areas they're not trained in, still they feel that they should pontificate on. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why we have to be very, very careful, is why we brought this up here, is because Varnashram, we have to understand, is the relationships, natural human relationships of a human being in this world that emulate, right? The culture and practices of those in the spiritual world who are already perfect. In other words, Varnashram is the culture that one follows to become perfect like those on the spiritual platform who are already following it. Does that make sense? But there it's the purest form of Daiva Varnashram. You're not dealing with conditioned nature. You're dealing with constitutional nature. In other words, Daiva Varnashram applied on constitutional nature. While here we Daiva Varnashram on conditional nature. That's why there are aspects or points at which we give up certain things. Because we're switching from conditional nature following Varnashram to constitutional nature following Varnashram. Right? Someone on the platform of Baba, right, doesn't have to follow Varnashram here in this world because they're following it there. Bhava means you're in your spiritual form, rendering service on that platform. So they're following the culture there. Right? You think they're going to be there, they're going to end up as a resident of Vrindavan, and then someone's going to say, well, here in Braj we do this, and then they say, oh, I don't care, we don't care for Varnashram. They're going to say that? You know? Nanda Baba is the king. Oh, what do we care? You know, what is his authority? You know? That's Varnashram. You know what I'm saying? So much of everything goes on because of that. Does that make sense? So we always have to remember that Varnashram's central sole purpose is to elevate you from the conditioned platform to the transcendental platform. And it does it by engaging your senses in the same activities that those on the transcendental platform would engage their senses. Does that make sense? The difference is they always remember Krishna, we don't. Therefore, they do it naturally, we have to do it according to a rule. Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. So, in other words, Varnashram is spiritual culture in practice. Does that make sense? Yes.
Some of them may say that is good, but prominent is chanting of Hare Krishna. That contains everything.
That contains everything. And then the person saying this is married? No. Or the person saying this is living in Beverly Hills in their mother's house? You know what I'm saying? They're chanting Hare Krishna. Go sit under a tree. We don't need political correctness. We don't need bureaucracy. We don't need all this different thing. Sit under a tree and do like the Goswamis do and run the whole movement from there. Because your only interest is spiritual life, spiritual everything. You couldn't care less. You spit on political correctness. You spit on modern diplomacy. And you only care for devotional service. And you only care about devotees. And you don't want to see anyone go away. And you won't drive anyone away. Because all there is devotional service. All there is chanting Hare Krishna. I see that, then that's honest to say that. If they're not, then I say they're cheating. They're simply using it for their own managerial and economic purposes. Bus. There is only chanting Hare Krishna. Then what about taking prasad? Why are you eating? Why are you washing after you go to the toilet? Rishabhdev did not wash after he went to the toilet. In fact, he rolled around in it. So why don't you do that and chant Hare Krishna? You know, so I'm really annoyed with the conditioned soul in his full conditioned glory saying there's only Hare Krishna and then considering so many facets of his conditioned nature. We only chant Hare Krishna, but then we wear dress casuals. If we only chant Hare Krishna, we'd be going around in kopans or naked. Haridas Thakur wears what? He only chants Hare Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That's my point. He doesn't care about anything. Like that. He's chanting Hare Krishna. A prostitute comes and sits next to him. Then he just keeps chanting. She'll get purified. You know what I'm saying? So we have to understand how to apply we just chant Hare Krishna. It's true, we just chant Hare Krishna. But what does that mean? How do we apply that as a conditioned soul? That we have to understand. Does that make sense? We're not strong with you. We're strong with the propounders of this. We do chant. That is our main focus. Yes, when it comes to any other mantra, it's the main mantra. When it comes to any other process, it's the main process. But since we are not satisfied with that, therefore there are other processes. If you just chant Hare Krishna, you don't have to brush your teeth, you know. You don't have to shave, comb your hair, do anything. But are those propounders that we just chant Hare Krishna just doing that? No, they're getting up in the morning, taking their shower, shaving. Why? Because the Shastra says? No, because it's the Malecha and Yavana, they used to do that. And if they don't, their wife won't like them. That's why they're doing it. They're shaving their face because their wife doesn't like, you know, when he touches her with a bristly face. That's why he's shaving. Not because that's the Shastra. So someone who accepts the Shastra, lock, stock, and barrel, can say, we only chant Hare Krishna. Because then they will be able to balance it and see that the Shastra only talks about it. Manu says that the highest duty of a Brahmin is to chant japa. It says if he does that, then all other duties are accomplished. I don't hear him saying that. I don't even see them practicing that. Only chant Hare Krishna and go out and, you know, shake a bucket and collect coins. If we just chant, we sit down and chant. So where did this collection come from? That's economics. Where did that come from? Oh, we have to eat. No, Haridas Thakur just chants. Someone brings him something, he eats. Someone doesn't bring him something, he doesn't eat. That's just chanting Hare Krishna. Yes.
And the argument is also that by chanting Hare Krishna and serving the Vaishnavas.
Serving the Vaishnavas, okay.
This cultural aspect comes automatically.
It comes automatically, yes, it does, if a Malecha is aware of it. But criticizing devotees also comes pretty naturally. Associating with devotees, what does that mean? How do you associate with devotee? What would you serve a devotee as food? How would you serve it? What's the environment in which you would serve that food to that Vaishnava? Right? What does Guhya Makati Prichati? A devotee comes to you and says, I'm having this problem in my devotional service. And then the next day it's on the internet? Is that Guhya Makati Prichati? So I don't see this that people are talking about. Where is it? I can go over to the temple. I can go to any temple in the world. I will not see one standard prasad because they don't know how to cook. Neither will I see standard prasad service. Neither do they know the environment in which to serve prasad. Nothing. So what culture are they following? The natural culture that they were born with. But the whole point is human life means you are trained in what is human. You're born an animal. You're trained to be a human. So the whole point is notice that it's only on points of Vedic culture and practices that all this, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, all the fighting's about. No one's fighting about the Western culture. Nothing. Zip. Why? Because they came from Malechas, they still follow the Malecha culture. Or Malecha's meat eater, so they've gotten rid of that, but they're opposed to the Vedic principles, so that technically that's called the Yavana culture. Yavanas means they're against Vedic culture. Malecha means they're meat eaters. Generally, Yavanas are meat eaters, so they're kind of synonymous. But you could be a Malecha and be favorable. Does that make sense? So the whole point is I don't see that they're throwing out, you know, the modern stuff. That's all, we're just being practical, Yukta Vairagya. But if it's Yukta Vairagya, we could also use the Vedic. The modern is just as irrelevant as the Vedic. Because the modern, where is modern? Any fashion in the modern world disappears after how many months? And that's in general, 6 months. But if you're in a particular group, it can disappear within a week. So basically anything that one would be doing would be irrelevant. By modern definition. Modern means what's happening right now. So if you're doing what happened yesterday, you're irrelevant. That means you're not modern. So technically, you can never be modern. Because you can never just do the thing now, unless you're setting the trend. And if you're setting the trend, where's the need of political correctness? Because what you do is what everybody else follows. You know, or fitting in. You would be the one setting the standards. So the whole thing is very, very inconsistent. Very inconsistent. Like that. Vedic is eternal. It always applies. You just have to have the brains to be able to apply it. If you can't apply it, just say, I don't know how to apply it. But don't puff yourself up and say it's not possible to use, especially if you've never tried. Does that make sense? Prabhupada wanted every devotee to spend a year in India to get that experience. Prabhupada, he had 108 temples, right, around the world. He'd spend 6 months in India and 6 months to the rest of the world. What does that say? When he came to India in the beginning, there was no facilities. They go around, stay in these very cultured people's houses, right? And he'd tell the devotees they should learn from them about the culture. When Subhagma Maharaj joined, Prabhupada told him, because he's from a very high-grade aristocratic Bengali family in Calcutta, he told him, don't forget what your parents have taught you, right? You add Krishna consciousness. Very different from what these people are saying. Just throw it all out. But when they throw it out, what's left? Their own middle-class American lifestyle. That's what's left. Some of them upper class American lifestyle. And some of them lower middle class. You know what I'm saying? But it's just an average American lifestyle. That's what's left. But that's fine. Oh, that's Yukta Vairagya. That's being practical. That's this. That's that. Blah, 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 blah. Because they don't have enough brains to understand the Vedic. It's over their head. Like someone who can't swim throwing me in the deep end of the pool. They don't know what's going on. But they're so proud, they can't acknowledge that. Just so proud. The Vedic culture is so refined. Why does Krishna follow? Why does he come to establish it? Yada, yada, yadarmasya. He comes to establish what? The Vedic culture. And if they can't see the Vedic culture, get some glasses. You know? Like that. Someone who knows Vedic culture can see it every day in India. And these people can't see it at all. You know? And just like Max Mueller, he never stepped foot in India. So just like him, all these academics follow him, and they could, the blind men following into the ditch. Blind leading the blind. Why do you think that example is there? We're not saying they're stupid. We're saying they're blind. So I'm saying it's very, very annoying that Srila, we didn't know about Vedic before Prabhupada came along. And then now we're going to, you know, throw it out. We're the big Paramahamsas. Prabhupada only taught us Vedic. Why are they wearing dhotis on 26th Second Avenue? Devotees thought, well, they wear them in India. Can we wear them, Prabhupada? Well, I don't know, you know, it's kind of, but I guess if you have that sentiment. Who introduced dhotis? Who introduced shaved heads? Sikhas, Brahmin underwear, Brahmin threads, neck beads. Who introduced all this stuff? And now these people are going to throw it out? Who are they? Who are these people? Who do they think they are? That they can just write off what Srila Prabhupada did because they can't do it, they can't figure out how to apply it, they're so foolish, they're so uninformed, they lack the practice, they lack the sadhana, they lack the discipline. and then they're going to say they have the right to throw it out? Nonsense. Nonsense. It makes no sense how they can think like this. They have their own taste, they have their own comfort. Fine. What does it matter? Probably couldn't care less that the temple president in, where was it at the time? I think it was L.A. Or San Francisco, L.A. I can't remember, one of those temples. The guy had a beard. Papa didn't care. He did a service. So what do we care? They want to wear modern clothes and be modern and eat modern. What do we care? But you make a philosophy out of it, then we're going to come after you. You just, this is the way I am. I'm comfortable like this. I like moving in these social circles. I'm comfortable to preach in these areas. Great. That's how we're going to make the world Krishna conscious. But they want to be the world and be the acharya at the same time. It doesn't work like that. You can't behave and act and talk like a common man and then claim that you're the leader of everything. You can't do that. You know? So the devotee, he lives outside. So many devotees, they live outside. They live their own lifestyle that they would be practically be living anyway if they weren't a devotee. They were hippies, they would be vegetarian, they would be organic and natural, they would be trying to live some kind of alternative lifestyle and use alternative medicine and alternative this and that and some Reiki and throw all whatever it is you like in there. They would be doing some meditation, some kind of sadhana. They would be reading some kind of spiritual book. They would have been doing that anyway. You know what I'm saying? And then they're going to comment about the eternal principles of Krishna consciousness. They can't follow them, doesn't mean others can't. They don't like to follow them, doesn't mean others don't. They can't see the reason for them, doesn't mean others don't. So that's the whole thing, live and let live. They want to live like that, fine. But why do they have to be in the face of those who are trying? You know? It's like the principle we see in the pastime at Damayanti. That the caravan was traveling with tame elephants, you know, to carry all the goods, the merchants. Going through the jungle, then they come across, you know, they bump into a herd of wild elephants. One thing wild elephants can't tolerate is tame elephants. Tame. You know tame? Tame means domesticated. You catch an elephant and then train him up and then, you know, like we have here, a tame elephant. Temple elephant's a tame elephant. So wild elephants don't like that. Why are they, you know, submissive to these humans? So they'll come in and make a mess. So in the same way, untrained humans don't like it if people try to follow human culture. You understand? Because that means then they're an animal. You know what I'm saying? If Vedic culture can be applied today effectively, that means those who don't want to follow it, then they're obliged to follow it, because Prabhupada said. Now we can prove it doesn't apply today, you can't use it, no one can do it, then everybody's comfortable. So therefore, those who are attempting to follow Vedic culture make those who are not uncomfortable. Of course, it would do well to those who are following the culture to stick to themselves also and not bother those who don't want to follow. That way then everybody's comfortable. Right? Don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. We're not saying ignorant of Krishna consciousness, we're saying ignorant of culture. Or let's say at least ignorant of Vedic culture. Right? And they can't discriminate between the principles of the Vedic culture and people's sadhana in trying to affect it. So if anybody does anything wrong, you throw it out. But if we were going to do this, we should have banned marriage a long time ago in ISKCON. You know what I'm saying? So what would be left? Right? There have been people who have eaten and gotten sick. So we should ban that also. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be able to try. We have to be able to make that attempt to move forward. You see, it's a big point. You notice up to this point, everything goes smoothly. Right? Rasa, it's a little touch and go, but you know, hey, we can get by with it. It's not getting too technical. But as soon as we hit Varnashram, the trouble starts. Why? Because devotees accept the philosophy, not the culture. What did Prabhupada say? Philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So, what is the position of reinitiation? What is the standard? Ask 100 senior men, get 100 answers. Okay? Who is God? What is the process in this age? Right? Ask 100 senior men, get one answer. Philosophy they know, culture they wouldn't have a clue about. You understand? Individuals may understand and be very good at it. But the Western mind has no culture, can't relate to culture, doesn't like culture. Why? Because there may be a restriction in my sense gratification. I want to be independent, I want to do whatever I want. I don't want anybody controlling me and telling me what to do. But everybody else should follow rules so that they don't bother me. Doesn't make any sense, but that's the point. It's mental speculation. Right? Then on the other side, then the Hindus, they have religion without philosophy, so then it's just sentiment. Right? So the idea is we don't throw out the philosophy, we don't throw out the religion. They're supposed to be combined. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea. The combination of these two, the philosophy and the culture, that's human life. And remember, the Bhagavatam makes a very strong point that by studying this Bhagavatam, it will create a cultural revolution in people's lives. It didn't say philosophical, it said cultural. Right? Because it's a culture of Krishna consciousness. That means in the spiritual world, there's an attitude on how to interact with devotees. So saying, only the association of devotees, so define that association. That's where you start running into problems. Because that you associate with devotees, that's philosophy. How to associate, that's the culture. Does that make sense? So we always have to be careful here, is that the philosophy is the main point, it's the eyes. Right? But that whole form and that of it, that's your culture. Otherwise, what does it mean? I surrender, you means surrender to Krishna. Okay, so how do I surrender? What does it look like, a surrendered devotee? Right? What are our examples? Yudhishthira Maharaj, surrendered devotee. What culture did he follow? Arjuna, surrendered devotee. What culture did he follow? Right? Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, surrendered devotees. What culture did they follow? Right? Srila Prabhupada, surrendered devotee, what culture did he follow? Are we seeing a pattern here? So that's the idea. All this stuff means all it is means that they don't know it, they don't want to take the time to figure it out. Because they think it's so big, so complicated, just rules and regulations, but that itself is a misunderstanding. Varnashram is a method of relationship. And how many self-help books do they read? For the purpose of what? Relationships, efficiency in the material world, attitude. The Varnashram explains all that perfectly, but they're unable to see it. unable to appreciate it. We understand that can happen, but don't make a philosophy out of it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just, we just chant Hare Krishna. Nice. Then why did we just have Hare Nam week? That's one out of 52. What happened to the other 51 weeks of Hare Nam week? You know what I'm saying? So where is this, we just chant Hare Krishna? Right? That's my point. That make sense? Otherwise, we would just depend upon, someone does something wrong, what would we do? Make sure that they're chanting Hare Krishna. But no, we have all kinds of mundane ideas how to purify somebody that don't work, that are not supported by Shastra. You know, there's somebody's mental speculation. Is that okay? Yes.
In Krishna's Leela, we see that in Mathura, he's studying Sandipani Muni's Gurukul.
Yes.
In Braja, what would you say is the ashram that Krishna is following?
Grihastha. He's brahmachari, but, you know, they're grihastha. Because you don't really give them, they're brahmacharis till they go to the Gurukul for the dvijas. You know what I'm saying? But technically they're in the grihastha environment. They're supposed to be in the Gurukul environment. You know, they're in the family environment.
So generally they're supposed to go younger at the age of 5.
They would. If Krishna was in Mathura, that may have happened.
Right.
So you see, as soon as he went back to Mathura, then the first thing his parents did?
Give him a Brahmacharya.
They sent him to Gurukul. Yeah. Because that would have been done before, but they couldn't do it. But there, it's that, you know, he grows up there, he's following the, you know, the Vaishya duties, but he's an unmarried Vaishya. So that basically your brahmachari principles apply. Right? It's just not so rigid, it's not so obvious, the teacher and stuff like that. But they have son, you know, they have Gargamunis, you know, family guru, and, you know, the parents are there as guru, other leaders of the society are guru. So he's getting good instruction. You never hear of him not being expert in following the culture. He's very good at the etiquette and everything, so that's all working nice. So he's learned that from his gurus, like that. But it's for the purpose of performing one's duties and living in the grihastha environment. It's not for the purpose of elevating oneself and getting one out. Right? Therefore, when he goes to Mathura, then he shows, you know, then, you know, now, you know, he's going to be a king, so therefore now what to do. Does that make sense? You know, then he studies all the Vedas and this and that. But you see in Krishna's pastimes in Braj, they're quoting Vedas all the time. They're quoting Shastra, and Nanda Baba's talking about Bhagavad Gita. So they know all these things. You know, but it's to bring oneself to the proper realization that one can take it beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? In Krishna's Leela, they only have to worry about Dharma, Artha, and Kama. You understand? They don't have to worry about Moksha, because they're already liberated. They're already perfect. They don't have to give up their family life and their seeming material activities, or, you know, ordinary activity, because all their activities are connected to Krishna. Right? So they're already on the perfect platform. The problem is people come here, follow Varnashram or less, but it's not connected to Krishna. That makes sense.
So we see that even though, like even our acharyas, many of them were not raised in a Gurukul environment, still it was Vedic culture, so it was favorable towards their...
Yes, it's always favorable. The Vedic, that's what Prabhupada said, dead or alive, it's valuable. So even though they say it's Indian, the Vedic culture is dead, it's still worth more than any culture anywhere else in the world.
like that. Does that make sense? Why is it that the Oriental culture is catching so much attention? Because there's some substance there that's not found in the Western cultures. And where does the Oriental culture get its basis of all those arts and sciences? From the Vedic. Right? But they just can't handle it in the Vedic form. It's too direct, too spiritual, too, you know what I'm saying? Like that. Well, the Oriental's enough adjusted that they can relate to it. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
I remember this year when we went for Raja Mandala Parikram, there was one Raja Vasi who was asking some questions, and one of the questions was that how do people in the West arrange marriages, or what is the system they follow? And we told him that they don't really have, there is no system as such. And then his mood was like, he couldn't just believe that in the West they don't have a system for that.
Yeah, they don't have a system, because it's so logical why you'd have a system. You know, it's just like saying, if I asked, you know, we've taught you cooking and all that, and you know how the spices work and the vegetables mix and how you, you know, different things to do and what's cooked and uncooked. And they say, so what's the, you know, cooking method of, you know, those, you know, where you come from? Oh, we don't have a cooking method. It just kind of happens. You'd be like, oh, what do you mean? How can it just happen? You know what I'm saying? The people who don't know the culture, it's just happening. They think it's normal. But look at what the result of it. They're not happy. But the Vedic, they know what is human life, so they know what they're looking for. Like if you know what is actual food, then when you cook, you can get it. If you don't know what food is, when you try to cook, or you don't know the science of cooking, what you end up with, you know. Yeah, very difficult. That makes sense. Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nityananda. Gaura Premanandi.
Hari Hari Bol.